Thank you very much, and good afternoon to all of you and to those who might be in cyberland, and certainly a warm welcome to our visitors here today. It's nice to have you here. You know, I'm amazed that there are millions of Christians that think of the Old Testament as second rate, as not really valid, not really pertaining to them, and it's a shame because I love the Old Testament. I find there are so many valuable things in there, and today I'd like to begin with a story that can be found in 2 Kings 5. In 2 Kings 5, you find the story of a man who was a mighty man of valor. He was a great man, an honorable man. In fact, God says that it was through this man that he gave victory to the Syrians. He was the commander of the Syrian army. This man's name was Naaman. But Naaman, for all these good things he had going for him, had a problem. He had leprosy. And through a course of events, he came to find out that there was a prophet in Israel who could heal him. Well, this was very intriguing, so he packed his gold and his belongings, and he headed off. And he arrived at the prophet Elijah's home. And he's expecting the prophet's going to come out. He's going to perform this great ceremony, maybe shake his hands around, call out to the God, cry, and do this big production, maybe ask him for a lot of gold and stuff. But he was shocked. None of this happened. Simply a messenger met him and said, "Go wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan River, and you will be cleansed." What? The prophet didn't come out and to visit him? Well, he got mad. He started headed home, kind of in a rage, thinking, this is ridiculous. Well, there are much better rivers where I come from. Why couldn't I have just washed there? I don't really agree with the way they're telling me to do this. This is just stupid. Well, then, he had some very wise servants, and they finally found their opportunity. They said, "Hey, master, you know, if he had asked you to do something really great, really complicated, had you fork over a ton of money, you would have done it happily. So why not go do this simple little thing like jump in a river 7 times? Well, he was smart enough to listen to his servants. And so he went and washed himself 7 times in the Jordan, and lo and behold, he was cleansed. He was healed. Now, we know that the Old Testament was written for our learning, for our admonition. It's for our benefit that these stories exist, that they're contained in these pages of the Bible for us to read. Have you ever asked yourself, what does God want us to learn from this particular story? Well, I don't think it's limited to the list I have, but here's a few things that I noted right off the bat. It is not enough to hear or understand or know what God's message is. The message isn't always given in a way that we like or expect. And the content of the message isn't always pleasing to us. Furthermore, God is not complicated or confusing about what he wants or expects from us. He's very simple. He's very straightforward and direct. The other thing we might learn is that good friends will always come back and point us to obeying what God says to do. No ifs, ands, or buts. Do what God said. And probably the most obvious lesson in this story is there is no substitute, no amount of knowledge that can substitute for simple obedience. Just do what God said. Now today, like Naaman, God gives us very simple messages. They're not even complicated. The question is, what will we do with them? Now there are a lot that are contained, and just like Naaman, God did not come down and physically talk to you. He put them in this Bible. He sent them through a messenger. And one of the messages I would like to focus on today is one simple message: get dressed. God says, get dressed. He says it from Genesis through Revelation. Now, he uses different words, but the message is always the same. Sometimes he says, put on. Put on this, put on that, but put it on. You're probably thinking of Ephesians 6, where it says, put on the whole armor of God. And he goes through to delineate exactly what that is. In other places, God says, be clothed with humility. In either case, he's telling us to get dressed. In fact, Genesis should have given us an indication that God was very concerned about what we wore. when Adam and Eve showed up with the fig leaves, he said, no, 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 this isn't going to work. He says, you don't dress in fig leaves. Let me make you some clothes. Here, Eve, I've got a set of animal skins for you. Here, Adam, I've made something for you. Notice God changed the substance. He is very concerned that they be clothed, and they be clothed in the right thing. Now, I think we are all aware that this is not just physical clothing we're talking about. If you turn to Matthew 22, we find a very important parable that is very relevant to us because it's about the kingdom of God. In Matthew 22, in verse 1, we'll begin reading. And Jesus answered and spoke to them again by parables and said, the kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who arranged a marriage for his son. And he sent out his servants to call those who were invited to the wedding, and they were not willing to come. Again, he sent out his servants saying, tell those who were invited, see, I have prepared a dinner. My oxen, the fatted cattle are killed, and all things are ready. Come to the wedding. But they made light of it. And they went their ways. Some went to the farm. Some went on to their businesses. And if we skip down to verse 10, we see that those servants who went into the highways gathered all that whom they could find, both good and bad, and the wedding hall was filled with guests. But then the king came to see the guests, and he saw there a man who did not have on a wedding garment. And he said, friend, what are you doing here without a wedding garment? And the man was speechless. He did not have a word to be said. And the king said to his servants, bind him hand and foot. Take him away. Cast him into outer darkness. For there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are called, few are chosen. When I read these scriptures, I ask myself, how sure am I that I have on the wedding garments? These are people just like you and I. We're servants of God. We're called. We're invited to that wedding feast. Are we going to be accepted? Are we really clothed and ready for that? Now, there are scriptures that would tell us exactly what these garments are made of. Colossians 3 and verses 10 through 14 has a great list. But today I'm not going to spend time going through all the elements that would make up a wedding garment. But there are very specific attributes that are included in there. And it's something that we could use for another study, or if we had a sermon, we could do that. But what I'd like to do is just focus on a couple of things here. Made light of. How do you make light of putting on clothing? Well, they were told about the wedding, and one of the things that's real obvious is they put it off. They probably were thinking, hey, I'll get around to it. But you and I both know, when you have a wedding to go to, or if you're in it, you don't wait till the last minute. I can remember going to some weddings, and you start months ahead of time finding the tuck shop, checking out prices. You got to go get measured and fitted, and then they say it's ready, and you go back and they tailor it. They fine-tune it to make sure it's just right for you. Sometimes you might be going to another state, and so you got to make sure this tailor is measuring the same way that tailor is going to do it to make sure everything's okay. The other thing that seems obvious is that there's something in God's people. We just don't really want to believe that we could actually be naked or have the wrong garments on. And we see it here. They didn't really think they were going to be kicked out because they had the wrong garments. In Revelation 3, where we read about the Sardis church, perhaps you remember these words where it says, you have few names, even in Sardis, who have not defiled their garments. And they shall walk with me in white, for they are worthy. He who overcomes shall be clothed in white garments, and I will not blot out his name from the book of life. Again, church people, people who are called, there's the warning. Very few of them actually kept the right type of garment on. Laodicea, we read down in verse 17, because you say I am rich and have become wealthy and have need of nothing, and do not know that you are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. I counsel you to buy of me gold tried in fire and to buy of me white raiment. Again and again, you could go to Revelation 16 and God warns again that you've got to have the right garments on. Otherwise, you're walking around naked. There is somebody is naked. It's so obvious that there are some of God's people who are not clothed. And how often are we clothed? Are we clothed all of the time, some of the time, or only a little bit of the time? These are questions that only you and your God can answer. Only me and my God can answer them. But I don't want to take chances to assume it applies to someone else, or that's that other church of God over there. I don't think that's the case. I think these warnings are here for a reason, so that we can be ready. And you know, we all know how embarrassing it would be to be caught naked out in public. Well, spiritually, it's going to be very embarrassing. He says, weeping and gnashing of teeth. I don't think it's something, even though it's simple, to get dressed with the right clothes, it's not something we want to take lightly and forget to do. So I would like to take a look at one other thing. How do we get dressed? And when we look at it physically, I think the answer is obvious. When I get dressed in the morning and when you get dressed in the morning, what do? I do it one thing at a time. I put on one sock. I put on the other sock. I put on my pants. I put on my shirt. I do not start to put on the sock a little bit, put on this shirt a little bit, let's put this shoe on a little bit. I don't get scatterbrained. I learned to do one thing at a time, and when I mastered how to put my socks on, then my mom taught me how to put my pants on, and then I focused on my shoes, which took a long time. It took a long time to learn how to tie those shoes. But slowly and surely, I learned to do these things. I learned to do it not by doing a whole bunch of things all at the same time, but by focusing on one thing. And so I think spiritually, this is what I found works for me. For years, I didn't make very much progress because I was what I called a shotgun Christian. Oh, that's a great message. Let me go do that. Oh, that's another good message. Let me go do that. Did you hear what David Holliday said? Oh, that was really cool. What was that again? Oh, yeah, I was reading this other article over here. I'm running around like a chicken with his head cut off. And at the end of the year, how did I change? I didn't. But when I took a different approach, change became much more obvious. When I decided to take a message that moved me, either it bugged me because it pricked my conscience or it excited me, and I would take that message, I'd go get the tape, and if the tape crew said, oh, we need a blank, I'd go get them a blank. I'd listen to that thing 20, 30 times. Every single day I'd think about it. I'd start adding other scriptures the minister didn't have time to put in there. I'd start thinking about other connections. Why would God even want this to be part of my nature and my character? If it's for my good, why is that? What would it look like if I took this one aspect and used it in my marriage, used it in my child rearing? What would it look like if I applied this in the workforce, in my dating life? How would that show up if I was going to respond to my parents this way? I start thinking and meditating on it, not for a day, not for a week, but for months. And after a while, guess what? I'm wearing it. It's part of who I am. And what I have found, that I'm far better off if I pick throughout the year two or three or four messages that move me and hang with them and think about them and try them on and alter them and adjust them, because at the end of the year, at least three or four things are done. Just like a little kid, well, I can't dress everything, but I can get my socks on, I can get my pants on, I still need help with my belt. I made progress. I am getting dressed. The more I think about it, I think a foolish Christian is one that carries around a lot of stuff. Let's think about a policeman. The policeman is in the little briefing with all the other men, and the sergeant says, now don't forget, the locker that holds the bulletproof vests are back there in room A. Okay, so don't forget to put that on. So the foolish policeman goes back there, and he gets that, and he puts it in the trunk of his car, and he heads out, and wow, belong to him. Comes across a bad guy, and the bad guy shoots him. Not a very smart policeman, although he had a bulletproof vest. He knew about it, he knew where it was, and he even had it with him. He was carrying it around. A smart policeman, a wise one, goes and he puts that vest on every day, not knowing when he's going to need it, but he's prepared when that bullet flies. I think it's the same way with us. We have a lot of knowledge, more than most people that have ever lived. But if we don't take it and put it on, we then move into the category of the foolish. We were given all this opportunity, all these defenses, and we didn't use them. Just a couple of common observations about clothing, in closing. One, it's a daily affair. Two, in our natural state, if we just do what comes natural, we're naked. It's an unnatural state to put clothes on. So we're going to have to make a decision, and we're going to have to do some action. The other thing is, when we put clothes on, they can be seen by other people. So if no one is noticing any of these traits in you, maybe you don't really have them. and you need to rethink. The other thing that's interesting, clothing covers up things we don't want seen by other people. So when we put on the new man, when we wear the new man, it hides the old man. It's a way of pushing down the old man. And the last thing that's very obvious is clothes identify who we are. A soldier who is dressed as a green beret, he's not mistaken for a French military man. By the clothes you wear, it's obvious to everyone which army you belong to. What we put on each and every day will decide whether we're part of Satan's army or God's army. So the message through the Bible from Genesis to Revelation is the same. Get dressed.